Blog Talk Radio.
With Merle, and I'm your host, Merle Exit, and I'm here in the evening. It's dark out and cold in New York City, and let's see, what else can I tell you? Well, you could tell what the date it is. I don't know what else you need to know, but I have an interesting, well, all my shows are interesting. Tonight, let's see. Well, you know, I wrote a book, and so now that I wrote a book, what do I do? Well, we got Brian Judd, who's coming on, and he's going to talk about his latest book called Beyond the Bookstore. It's about selling your book or getting your book to places that are not just the bookstores. What do you do with that? Then about cleaning your home, yeah. You need your kids to help, huh? Well, we got Yuma Guaz. She will speak about her book, as well as cleaning products from Shark, like a vacuum, electric broom, floor steamer. And also, I'm going to give you an update on me with Nutrisystem and New Kitchen. Okay. But first, I'm going to read, I have an email, it's a long joke, but I got to read this to you. It's Roping a Deer. I'm just going to read you this. It says, I had this idea that I was going to rope a deer, put it in a stall, feed it up on corn for a couple of weeks, then kill it and eat it. The first step in this adventure was getting a deer. I figured that since they congregate at my cattle feeder and do not seem to have much fear of me, when we are there, a bold one will sometimes come right up and sniff at the bags of feed while I'm in the back of the truck, not 4 feet away. It should not be difficult to rope one. Get up to it and toss a bag over its head to calm it down. Then hog tie it and transport it home. I fill this cattle feeder, then hid down at the end with my rope. The cattle, having seen the roping thing before, stayed well away. They were not having any of it. After about 20 minutes, my deer showed up. Three of them. I picked out a likely-looking one, stepped out from the end of the feeder, and threw my rope. The deer just stood there and stared at me. I wrapped the rope around my waist and twisted the end so I would have a good hold. The deer still just stood and stared at me, but you could tell it was mildly concerned about the whole rope situation. I took a step towards it. It took a step away. I put a little tension on the rope and then received an education. First thing that I learned is that while a deer may just stand there looking at you funny while you rope it, they are spurred to action when you start pulling on that rope. That deer exploded. The second thing I learned is that pound for pound, a deer is a lot stronger than a cow or a colt. A cow or a colt in that weight range, I could fight down with a rope and with some dignity. A deer, no chance. That thing ran and bucked and twisted and pulled. There was no controlling it and certainly no getting close to it. As it jerked me off my feet and started dragging me across the ground, it occurred to me that having a deer on a rope was not nearly as good an idea as I had originally imagined. The only one side is that they do not have as much stamina as many other animals. A brief 10 minutes later, it was tired and not nearly as quick to jerk me off my feet and drag me when I managed to get up. It took me a few minutes to realize this, since I was mostly blinded by the blood flowing out of the back gash in my head. At that point, I had lost my taste for corn-fed venison. I just wanted to get the devil creature off the end of that rope. I figured if I just let it go with the rope hanging around its neck, it would likely die slow and painfully somewhere. At the time, there was no love at all between me and the deer. At that moment, I hated the thing, and I would venture a guess that the feeling was mutual. Despite the gash in my head and the several large knots where I had cleverly arrested the deer's momentum by bracing my head against various large rocks as it dragged me across the ground, I could still think clearly enough to recognize that there was a small chance that I shared some tiny amount of responsibility for the situation we were in. I didn't want the deer to have to suffer a slow death, so I managed to get it lined back up in between my truck and the feeder, a little trap I had set beforehand, kind of a little squeeze chute. I got it back in there, and I started moving up so I could get my rope back. Did you know the deer bite? They do. I never a million years would have thought that a deer would bite someone, so I was very surprised when I reached up there to grab that rope, and the deer grabbed hold of my wrist. Now, when a deer bites you, it is not like being bit by a horse, where they just bite you and then let go. A deer bites you and shakes its head, almost like a pit bull. They bite hard and it hurts. The proper thing to do when a deer bites you is probably to freeze and draw back slowly. I tried screaming and shaking instead. My method was ineffective. It seems like the deer was biting and shaking for several minutes, but it was likely only several seconds. I, being smarter than a deer, though you may be questioning that claim by now, tricked it. While I kept it busy tearing the tendons out of my right arm, I reached up with my left hand and pulled that rope loose. That was when I got my final lesson in deer behavior for the day. Deer will strike at you with their front feet. They rear right up on their back feet and strike right about head and shoulder level, and their hooves are surprisingly sharp. I learned a long time ago that when an animal like a horse strikes at you with their hooves and you can't get away easily, the best thing to do is try to make a loud noise and make an aggressive move towards the animal. This will usually cause them to back down a bit so you can escape. This was not a horse. This was a deer. So obviously, such trickery would not work. In the course of a millisecond, I devised a different strategy. I screamed like a woman and tried to turn and run. The reason I had always been told not to turn and run from a horse that paws at you is that there is a good chance that it will hit you in the back of the head. Deer may not be so different from horses after all, beside being twice as strong and three times as evil, because the second I turned to run, it hit me right in the back of my head and knocked me down. Now, when a deer paws at you and knocks you down, it does not immediately leave. I suspect it does not recognize that danger has passed. What they do instead is paw you back and jump up and down on you while you're laying there crying like a little girl and covering your head. I finally managed to crawl under the truck, and the deer went away. So now I know why people go deer hunting. They bring a rifle with a scope to sort of even the odds. Well, okay. Now that you heard that, we're ready for our first guest to come on. And so I guess I got Jed on, Brian on the line, don't I?
Yes, you do, Merle.
Hi, Brian.
Hi, how are you?
Oh, just fine.
Sounds like it.
As an introduction, just to let everybody know, Judd is a special sales marketing consultant, television host, and president of Premium Book Company, selling books on a commission-only basis to buyers in non-bookstore markets. He's the author of How to Make Real Money Selling Books and the Publisher's Weekly title, Beyond the Bookstore. And with Oracle Corporation, he created the Special Sales Profit Center, a CRM system and database of non-bookstore buyers. Brian is also the editor of the Book Marketing Matters e-zine.
E-zine, yeah.
Yeah, like an online, right?
That's right.
On special sales topics. And Brian wrote and published five titles on career transition that is distributed internationally in multiple languages. He's the author of the 8 e-books with proven tips for book marketing success. And Brian is a prolific writer of articles about book marketing and a regular contributor to the PMA newsletter. Now, I did not memorize these, folks. It is written in front of me. As a matter of fact, Brian emailed me so I can introduce him. Hi,
sounds
Brian.
Like you're having a good time tonight.
So, tell me, what's this with special sales? What is special sales about?
Well, special sales is primarily, it's non-bookstore marketing. I started out with my first book called Job Search 101 and started selling it through bookstores and found out that books are returnable. You have to go through a distributor that takes 65% of your revenue, and the books are returnable, and you get paid 120 days. It didn't sound like a great way to make money, so I started to... find other ways in non-bookstore markets. So this is, I started selling these to colleges and to corporations and to state governments and even supermarkets. I sold some to Kmart. I had it translated into Spanish and sold it through the Hispanic distribution channels and stores. So it's basically, the easy answer is it's everything outside of bookstores, which could be government, could be corporations, associations, schools. It could be supermarkets, airports, stores. So this any place other than the trade or the bookstore market. But it's a place that we can. I think it's a lot more lucrative selling books outside the bookstores, beyond the bookstore. If I made the title of my book.
So let me ask you. So we're going to going to use me as a guinea pig in this.
I can do that.
Of course. I do. I play guinea pig to all these things. I'm vice president of Guinea with this whole thing. I'm going to reach presidency pretty soon with all the things that I do. So I wrote a book on my autobiographical book. It's humor. It's adult humor. That's the thing I could say. And I did this through lulu.com, which I think you're familiar with, I guess?
I am, yes.
Okay, so then you know exactly what I did. And it's published by Lulu versus published by me. You get a choice on Lulu of what to do. So let's decide, what can I do with this book?
Well, I think, first of all, it's good to go through bookstores as an alternate route. I don't say you should not go to bookstores. I just say that should not be your only technique. So one would go to bookstores. But then once you get set up with the distributor and going to bookstores, then you start going to these other markets where you can make a lot more money. And you could have there's really good opportunities. I think one would be on cruise ships. That they hire people, well, they don't necessarily hire you. You can go on a cruise for 3 days, a week, or a month, and all your expenses are paid. And you might give 2 or 3 one-hour presentations a week. And all the time is free. But a humorist, I think, would be a great topic for that. Excuse me. Where they have a friend of mine, or a client of mine, is actually on a cruise right now, and he's talking about forensics. He wrote a book called Famous Crimes, and he's a retired physician. So he's talking about forensics, and he's talking about his murder mysteries, how to write mysteries. And so he's on a month tour for free. So that's one way. There are supermarkets. Airport stores is a great place to sell, are a great place to sell humor, because people are looking for something just to while away the hours. If their flight's delayed, or if they have a cross-country flight and they just want to do some fun reading, humor is great for that. So, and you think about who the target market is at an airport store. Is it business traveler? It's families traveling together? And those are the people that you want to contact.
So am I actually, let's say, I pop over at JFK Airport and I go to a whole bunch of places? I mean, is that how I'm doing it, or what's the way to do it?
Well, you have to go through Hudson News or Paradies, go to the wholesalers that sell to the airport stores. It could be Anderson News. And so he set up your distribution first. But these stores are a lot like selling to bookstores in the sense that you go through a distributor and the books are returnable.
Right.
So it's similar to a bookstore, but you have to get a distributor, and then I found a great way to get a distributor is to go to the end user, to the retailer, get them to approve the book, and then you go to the distributor and say, you know, they want my book, will you distribute me? And it's much easier.
So let's say who am I actually going to? The retailer of like Hudson News.
Hudson News. They have their own distribution through Hudson News Group. Anderson News could do that. If you're going to supermarkets, you go through Levy Home Entertainment.
Okay, so just so I can gather like the steps. So let's just say, in terms of, let's just say with airports, like how do I, in other words, am I getting the information by, there's no list, right? In other words, I'm basically going on and finding out, I guess, maybe a map of the airport and the stores or whatever.
Yeah, well, you can just do a Google search for airport stores. What I do is go to an airport. You might Google Atlanta Hartsfield Airport, for example.
Mm-hmm.
It has a list of all the stores on each concourse. And there might be a Hudson store on each concourse. There might be a Paradise shop. But there are also other stores that are in addition to these, the bookstores that are on the other concourses. So you may have a product that's appropriate. There may be a sunglass shop. If you have a book about sunglasses or about beaches or something, then you go to sell your book there. So I would go to the airport, go to the major airports. If you're going to Canada, you're going to a New York, one of the New York airports, then just do a Google search on the shops at the airport. Or just Google the airport itself, and then you go to the shops and contact those people. Ask them who their distributor is. In most cases, it will be someone like Anderson News or Hudson News Group. So that'd be a good place to start.
Okay, so I'm approaching them. I'm approaching them just to do it at, let's say, JFK or, say, Hudson News, like they'll maybe distribute it to all of the airports of possibility.
To possibly, Hudson's nationwide, but there are other, there are some places like in Minneapolis, there's a, just the author's bookstore, or bookshelf, I think it's called. In Hartford Airport, near where I am, there's a bookstore called Cover to Cover. They have some New England airports. So you can go regionally, you can go to a specific airport, you can go nationally with Hudson. So the variety. If you have a book, like a humor book, the likelihood of going national is better than if you have a book on traveling to Europe.
Right.
That's where JFK will take that, where San Francisco won't take that. They'll take more traveling to Japan or China. And the Gulf airport stores will have information about traveling to the Caribbean or to Central America, South America. So there are some geographical differences. There are books that are translated into Spanish would be along the Gulf Coast also.
Mm-hmm.
So there are some regional differences, but with your book, like a humor book, there's not too many regional differences of humor in the U.S. So I think that you have a better shot at going on a national basis. Someone who has a book on financial planning for an airport store would be good because you're reaching the business market. Someone with a book on destination topics, or if you have, there's one of the best-selling books at Boston Airport is a picture of a coffee table book about Fenway Park. That's not going to sell, and probably in New York it would sell very well.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So it's so there are regional differences. There are demographic differences, psychographic differences, but it just all depends on the title. But you have to start off with a plan. No store is going to take you on if you don't go to them with a plan. If you don't, you should tell them, if nothing, well, primarily, what kind of promotion will you be doing? Because they have very limited shelf space, and they want books that are promoted. So if you're out there doing TV and radio work or doing personal presentations, getting people to be familiar with your book, then you're much more likely to get in. Because they want people to walk in there and see that title and say, wow, I heard about that on the radio yesterday. Excuse me.
Right.
Cold over the weekend. But, you know, so they're looking for something that they can that's promoted. So your plan's got to describe why or how you're going to promote it, and then also why your book is better than, different from, and better than competitive titles. So I don't know the other humorous titles, but I wrote books about how to get a job, and everybody always, the first question was, how is it different from what color is your parachute? So I had to have an answer to that. So if you have if you have a market leader in your category, then you've got to, your plan to these Air Force stores should describe why they should have your book and what promotion you're going to do, and then you're much more likely to get taken on.
So in other words, for instance, now as I just look at it, I look at it as it's a humorous book and it's easy reading.
Good. Okay.
So it's the kind of book that that's kind of it. It's
the best way to use a book is as an expensive brochure, expensive business card, you might say. And for you to take that and go to a corporation and do a presentation at an annual meeting or at a sales meeting and sell your book at the back of the room, or tell the corporation if they have a sales meeting, they have 100 salespeople, if they have to buy 100 books as part of your fee, and so you get paid the fee, you sell the books, and you tell humorous stories. And that's what, particularly now, I guess, I know that that people are looking for levity. They're looking for a release. And for you to go there and talk to a corporation or to go to an association, find they have chapter. You can go to an association and find out where their chapters are. And so you find something less local. And they're looking for their annual conference. They're looking for humorous topics. And I think you have a great topic for this particular time in the way the economy is going, and people are looking for a release, looking for humor. So contacting corporations, associations, schools, military. The people think that they have to sell books to the military just about military history or about ships or about airplanes or something, but they're not. Most of the books are sold to the families of the service personnel, the people that are here in the U.S. while their loved ones are in Iraq or Afghanistan or somewhere else deployed overseas.
How does one sell to the military?
Well, there is a website called AFES is probably the best way to go.
I'm sorry?
AAFES, the Army Air Force Exchange Service.
Uh-huh.
And so you get on there and sell online. Each of the branches has an online exchange service like that. So you start out there. You can go to the bases individually. You can go through the Department of Defense. It's probably the best way to start, the Department of Defense website. There's a website called fedbizops.gov, fedbizops.gov. And that's a portal that you can start out, and it has links and resources to all sorts of the buyers for bases and for the military, the post installations. So those would be the best place to start. AFES, and then the Army and Air Force Exchange Service.com, and the FedBizOps.com.
So now, for instance, let's just say I get in touch. Now they'll say, yes, we'll buy the book. Are they now purchasing it through Lulu.com or Amazon.com? Is that what's going to happen then?
If that's what they'll call you and say we want X thousand of your books, and then you'll call Lulu and say print up X thousand books, but I wouldn't do it through Lulu, because the print on demand companies use a digital printing process where they print one at a time, and if you have about 1,000 more than 1,000 books, it's less expensive to print. If you have more than 1,000 books, it's less expensive to print offset. Less than 1,000 books, approximately 1,000, it's best to use the digital printing. But if they come to you and say you want to buy 2,000 of your books, then I would go to someone who can print them via offset instead of digital printing. You'll cut your unit cost by two-thirds. So that's what I would suggest. But there's a lot of paperwork when you deal with the government. There's a lot of paperwork. And part of that is where do they place the orders? So you want them to place orders directly with Lulu, then you do that.
Yeah, well, I'm getting that because I did an experiment of my selling the book.
Yep.
And somebody buying it through Lulu, and I got less money when somebody bought it through Lulu.
Yeah, that's what happens.
So it's it pays for me if they said for me to call Lulu and say, get Lulu and say, give me, I need 1,000 copies.
Yep, just
and
have
then,
them drop ship.
And then send them out to whoever.
Sure, just have them
yeah.
drop ship, which they can do.
Yeah.
And you do all the paperwork, just buy them from Lulu.
Well, that's some great ideas.
It's a lot more lucrative, Merlin, than selling through bookstores. It's more fun. You go out and call these people, and for you to just go to corporations, and I think that would be a great opportunity for a humorist.
And how about, like, you want to do book signings other than bookstores?
Well, yeah, but you don't want to just do a book signing. You want to do an event. So
right.
for you to come there, you would talk about humor. I would talk about how to get a job. Others talk about personal finance or self-help, how to diet. So it's they want to come in and they want to educate people, but of course you sell your books at the same time. But to go in there and just do a book signing, it's a very lonely time. You'll sell more books and meet more people if you have some event, some
right.
reason they would come to see you, not just to buy your book, but to come for your information.
Oh, okay. So, in other words, I should look for kind of events and...
Exactly right.
And,
so the author would go in there and contact the CRC, the Community Resource Person, and would have a proposal set up, have an example of what you would talk about, and here are the topics I'll talk about, and... have the bookstore do the promotion for it. They've got their mailing list, and they'll put up a poster in the front window that you'll be coming there next Thursday night to talk, and so they have them do the promotion for you also. But what they'll promote is that come to see Merle as a humorist, not as an author per se, because they want to attract people for the content of your message, not just to buy books. But of course, they'll have books there for sale, and it's a great way to sell books. You can do another thing is do a library tour. You can sell books in libraries and also get paid for it. They'll pay you to speak, not very much generally, enough to cover your expenses. Then you sell books at list price. At a bookstore, you're selling them through the bookstore, so you're losing your 60% off if you go through a distributor right there, or through a wholesaler, it's 55%. But you go to a library, it's list price, and you make 100% of it. And it's much more lucrative, and the library does the promotion for you too. So if you have something that's for my job search topics, I did a lot of that to libraries. They did all the promotion for it. I would show up, talk about how to get a job, and sell books. But the key is you're talking about your content. You're not talking about selling books. You're talking about what your book is about. That's the key.
Right. Okay. So in other words, I could probably, let's say, the subject is humor, or I can say, well, the subject is maybe how to be a writer.
Yep, that's right. Yeah, sure. And you talk about, that's a good topic for a bookstore particularly, or a library, that you talk about how to write humor, which would be a great topic. And how to write humorously could be a great topic. I think that you would go to writers groups, go to Goshen writers groups in the city, New York City, Learning Addicts. So you have opportunities there. Running a class at the Learning Addicts about how to write humor. Go to Goshen writers school and have them run a course on that, or just be a guest speaker. And you can sell books, but you get your name around. These are people that are learning how to write, and then once they get books out, then they'll join the publishing field and bring your name along with them. So you're establishing credentials as the how to write the humor expert, how to write humor expert. And
right.
That's where a book can be much more lucrative as a source of making you the expert. So you're doing personal presentations, so you get a speaking fee and you get your book sale. It's a lot more lucrative than just selling books on your own.
Cool.
It's fun.
All right. Well, I'm going to follow it. And what we're going to do is, we're going to follow up on this at some point.
Sure.
Now, if they wanted to get in touch with you, you got a website? Get in touch with you at bookmarket.com?
Bookmarketing.
Bookmarketing.
Yeah, bookmarketing.com, Brian Judd at BrianJud at bookmarketing.com, or my phone number is 800-JOB-HELP. That's based, I use that for my my job search books. So there's, they can always call 800-JOB-HELP also.
Okay. Well, I thank you for calling in.
My pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
And, yeah, we'll talk in the future.
Looking forward to it, Merle. Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Yes. Now, I have to kind of say that I don't know what's going on. I'm having trouble with my internet. Well, I don't know why it's doing this. Okay, well, let's see. Let's try. Internet Explorer is not doing it. I'm sorry if someone's on the line calling in, but for some reason, and they said go to Firefox. Firefox works. I had Opera before. Now that I have Firefox, it's screwing me up here. But what I'm going to do is that page is not loading. I don't know. I mean, I had my switchboard before. So what I'm going to do is, I'm going to talk to you guys. I'll chat. But in the meantime, while I'm chatting, I'm going to restart. Let's see. I'll restart my computer and... It's not like I can play some music because I don't have the switchboard. But I'm going to restart it. And in the interim, so I want to comment on something that that happened. Oh, well, I can't comment on that because it's in the computer. So let's leave that, and I'll tell you some more stuff that I got online. Let's see. This has to do with divorce. I guess a couple are getting a divorce, and here's the letters. The husband writes letter, then the wife responds. Dear wife, I'm writing you this letter to tell you that I'm leaving you forever. I've been a good man to you for 7 years. And have nothing to show for it. These last 2 weeks have been hell. Your boss called to tell me that you quit your job today, and that was the last straw. Last week you came home and didn't even notice I had a new haircut, had cooked your favorite meal, and even wore a brand new pair of silk boxers. You ate in 2 minutes and went straight to sleep after watching all of your soaps. You don't tell me you love me anymore. You don't want sex or anything that connects us as husband and wife. Either you're cheating on me or you don't love me anymore. Whatever the case, I'm gone. Your ex-husband. P.S. Don't try to find me. Your sister and I are moving away to West Virginia together. Have a great life. Dear ex-husband, nothing has made my day more than receiving your letter. It's true, you and I have been married for 7 years, although a good man is a far cry from what you've been. I watch my soaps so much because they drown out your constant whining and griping. Too bad that doesn't work. I did notice when you got a haircut last week, but the first thing that came to my mind was, you look just like a girl. Since my mother raised me not to say anything, if you can't say something nice, I didn't comment. And when you cooked my favorite meal, you must have gotten me confused with my sister because I stopped eating pork 7 years ago. About those new silk boxes, I turned away from you because the $49.99 price tag was still on them, and I prayed it was a coincidence that my sister had just borrowed $50 from me that morning. After all of this, I still loved you and felt we could work it out. So when I hit the lotto for $10 million, I quit my job and bought us 2 tickets to Jamaica. But when I got home, you were gone. Everything happens for a reason, I guess. I hope you have the fulfilling life you always wanted. My lawyer said that the letter you wrote ensures me you won't get a dime from me. So take care. Signed, your ex-wife, rich as hell and free. P.S. I don't know if I ever told you this, but my sister Carla was born Carl. I hope that's not a problem. Okay, so let's see. It's still coming up on here. What else can I read you here? Here's one. Yeah, I know it's after the Christmas and so. But this one I got, I thought was quite cute. Let me just say, first of all, I can pull up. Okay. When four of Santa's elves got sick, the trainee elves did not produce toys as fast as the regular ones, and Santa began to feel the pre-Christmas pressure. Then Mrs. Claus told Santa her mother was coming to visit, which stressed Santa even more. When he went to harness the reindeer, he found that three of them were about to give birth and two others had jumped the fence and were out heaven knows where. Then when he began to load the sleigh, one of the floorboards cracked. The toy bag fell to the ground and all the toys were scattered. Frustrated, Santa went into the house for a cup of apple cider and a shot of rum. When he went to the cupboard, he discovered the elves had drank all the cider and hidden the liquor. In his frustration, he accidentally dropped the cider jug, and it broke into hundreds of little glass pieces all over the kitchen floor. He went to get the broom and found the mice had eaten all the straw off the end of the broom. Just then, the doorbell rang, and an irritated Santa marched to the door, yanked it open, and there stood a little angel with a great big Christmas tree. The angel said very cheerfully, "Merry Christmas, Santa. Isn't this a lovely day? I have a beautiful tree for you. Where would you like me to stick it?" And so began the tradition of the little angel on top of the Christmas tree. Okay. Now I'm getting, what is this here? Now all of a sudden, Foxfire can't even, they tell me to get Foxfire and this is not even happening. Okay, so let's try, I'm going to try one more time. I don't know what's going on here. Let me try Internet Explorer. Oh, goodness gracious. Well, let me see. I wonder if I can, let's see. Let's see what's happening if Internet Explorer is coming on, at least. It's coming on up. Let's see. And I'm getting this again. Let's try. Oh, goodness. All right. Let's try one more. Let's try Opera. I don't know what's happening. Programs. Let's see. Let's see if I can get Opera. Okay. President Bush's year in review. Okay, let's see. Do I get Opera? Well, Opera comes on. Let's see if I can get now. All right, let's do this. Let's get let's get my website. Merle's World.com. Again, I apologize. What else can I do? Well, I'm not getting anything. I don't know what's happening. Okay, I'm going to try one more time. That instead of, I don't know whether it's, it can't be the weather. Let's see. Let's try. I'm going to do one more thing. This is really, okay. I'm going to turn it off and then redo this here. For all I know, I could be not even, that no one even hears me. But let's see. All right. In the meantime, okay, so President Bush's year in review. January. This is, of course, last year. Took new scarf back to store because it was too tight. February. Fired from pharmacy job for failing to print labels. Hello? Bottles won't fit in the printer. March. Got really excited. Finished jigsaw puzzle in 6 months. Box said 2 to 4 years. April. Trapped on escalator for hours. Power went out. All right. Let me just... Again. Computer. Okay. Computer going on. Back to this again. Okay. I'm using President Bush as opposed to any blonde jokes, by the way. Anyway. Okay. April. Trapped. Oh, right. May. Tried to make Kool-Aid. Wrong instructions. 8 cups of water won't fit into those little packs. June. Tried to get water to go water skiing. Couldn't find a lake with a slope. July. Lost breaststroke swimming competition. Learned later the other swimmers cheated. They used their arms. August, got locked out of my car in a rainstorm. Car swamped because soft top was open. September, the capital of California is C, isn't it? October, hate M&Ms. They are so hard to peel. November, baked turkey for 4.5 days. Instructions said 1 hour per pound, and I weigh 108. December, couldn't call 911. Duh, there's no 11 button on the stupid phone. Okay. Now I'm sitting here telling fucking jokes to pass the time because, yes. Why does this happen? Everything was so fine. I'm doing so well. And now this goes on. Let's see if I can pull up... Okay, let's try. Let's see if we can get Foxfire again on here. Okay. I have one more thing here called the email was, entitled, And the Fight Started. All right. I'm just going to read them. When I got home last night, my wife demanded that I took her someplace expensive. So I took her to the gas station. And then the fight started. My wife and I are watching Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. While we were in bed, I turned to her and said, do you want to have sex? No, she answered. I then said, is that your final answer? She didn't even look at me this time, simply said yes. So I said, then I'd like to phone a friend. And then the fight started. After retiring, let's see what comes up. Let's see if it made a difference. No. I have absolutely no idea. Okay, I'm going to try something since this isn't working. Let me see if this has something to do with the connection. And let me now reconnect it. I'm not a happy camper. Okay. And I'll let you know how this comes up here. boy. Yeah, I'm waiting here. Wait for Godot. Aha. Uh-huh. Okay. Let's see. Okay. Let's see if that made a farkin' piece of difference. No. Not one piece of difference. Am I getting, let's see what happens if I'm regarding my email. That's the way to look. Because if I'm not getting my email, let's see, okay. That's one way to tell. If I'm not getting email, then nothing is happening. Let's go. Okay. No, I'm receiving email. I'm receiving email, but none of the internet is working. I don't understand that. Yeah, that's right, Barbara. Blog Talk is acting at Blog Talk. I mean, it's the whole thing. It's I'm just not getting an internet connection all of a sudden. Who's my internet? I don't understand. If I'm getting email, why don't I get internet? Okay, let's see. Let's try again. The radio show. It's weird. The radio show comes up. I can get the radio show. But then when I try to get the... When I try to hit the switchboard, I got the switchboard. Looks like I have the switchboard. All right, I'll try. At least I have it from here. Oh, how long have you been waiting?
Marla, are you asking me?
Yeah, how long you've been waiting?
About 20 minutes. Do you want me to still wait? Or?
No, go ahead. I don't know what went on. I just had all these problems with the internet connection all of a sudden. And once I have that problem that I can't click on my switchboard. But now it seemed to have come back. So now that it's back. Hi, Yuma.
Hi, how are you?
All right. Tell us who you are and about the book, and then we'll talk about the cleaning products.
Well, I am a marketing executive, an author, an artist, I do many things and wear many hats. The book that I have written is titled How Cleaning My Room Changed My Life. It's recommended for ages 2 to 92, and it is about a little boy who is so messy that he loses everything he has. Until one day he ends up losing a very, very precious gift that his best friend has given him, which jeopardizes his relationship with her. And it's a coming-of-age story about how living in a messy room, in disorganization, can actually lead to bigger problems than we would ever expect, and lead to us, you know, losing our friends or losing important things in life. It's really a book that is designed to teach children and adults alike how to organize your life, and that can eventually impact many areas of your life. You know, as a mom, I've suffered through the disorganization of my children, and I see how it has impacted them in school and in their private life, and this is something that I wanted to share with the children of the world and help them gain certain tools so that they will not go through such problems, and they will have a more organized, planned life, and they will not lose time and their possessions.
So does it, I mean, does it teach you how to clean your room?
It actually does. There's a tutorial at the end of the book. The book is in two parts. The first part is this heartwarming story of this little boy, and then there's a part of the book where this boy goes through this tutorial by this machine. It's a cleaning tool that's called the My Sweeper that comes from this continent that's called, actually it's a planet that's called the Cleanland. And My Sweeper teaches him how to get organized. But we don't know what they're doing behind the closed door within the story. We just know that once his experience with the sweeper is over, his rooms are all clean and organized. And at the end of the room, it's like a door that opens up and it lets the reader in, and you see what the sweeper has taught this little boy. And there are some songs and there are some tactics and tips about, you know, for example, how to make your bed, how to fold your pants, how to put things away. When you think about it, you know, how much time do parents really spend with their children when they're growing up to really show them how to fold their clothes or make their bed? We somehow assume that they're going to do it, but they do need some kind of a tutorial. They do need a roadmap to help achieve these. So it does have many instructions, and then it has some age-appropriate instructions to children. And at the end, we give the kids a certificate about, you know, the fact that they've completed a tutorial and they have an organized life.
That's cool.
Yeah, well, I think it's going to be very helpful to the feedback we've been getting from parents and children has been phenomenal, and how it has impacted their organizational habits and how this has translated to their success in school and in other areas of their lives.
Now, and this is a book we can get it through Amazon or at the bookstore.
You can get it. Yeah, you can get it through Amazon.com, Target.com. It's also in BarnesandNoble.com, their online site. If you put in "How cleaning my room changed my life" or my name, it will come up very quickly. And so it can also, you can also get it from the website of the publisher of the book, which is cleaningforkids.com.
Okay, that's cool. Now, of course, I didn't have you on just for the book, for what, but one of your other hats.
Well, I have been in the one of the things that inspired the book is the fact that I have been working in the housewares and the cleaning industry, and one of my clients, and I'm a spokesperson for them, is Shark EuroPro, and they are really, really, they're an amazing company. You see their products all across the country in different stores. What's unique about their products is they really, really provide solutions to families' everyday messes, and they provide quick cleanup solutions so the cleaning doesn't become a really huge issue for families. And I have been working with them now for over 4 years, and they really have come up with some of the most innovative cleaning tools that I've ever seen in my life. And some of their cleaning products have been so popular, and the consumers are really, really rushing to get these, such as the steam mop or the sweeper, because they really make cleaning easy and quick, and that's what we're looking for, and effective.
So let's talk about some of these. Like, first of all, there's the floor up, which I have, so I've tried
mop.
These things out.
Yep.
Let's talk about first the floor steamer.
Yeah, it's the steam mop. It's the Shark steam mop. Shark is really an expert in understanding how steam is produced and how steam really cleans. Shark also has steam irons that are extremely effective, and they use their knowledge and understanding of steam and production of dry steam, and they applied this to cleaning. And they're really the innovators of steam cleaning in this country. And the Shark steam mop basically cleans floors without having the need to use any kind of chemical. If you think about the chemicals that the Americans use in their households, it's really, really scary. And I'll give you some numbers. The American Journal of Respiratory and Critical Care Medicine found that household cleaning products account for 15% of all asthma cases. And we really don't pay attention to the kind of chemicals we use in our house, but the indoor, they really pollute our indoor. And every time we take a chemical and put it on our floor, the fumes that come out enter our circulation system. And unfortunately, there hasn't been any long-term studies that have been done on human beings to connect their effects to cancer. However, the lab animals and the studies done on lab animals do show how overusage of some of the cleaning chemicals result in numerous abnormalities, including cancer. Now, the Shark steam mop obviously eliminates any kind of chemicals from your world. You can take it out, put just tap water in it. In 30 seconds, you have steam coming out, and you will clean your floors very effectively. There's a pad that comes with the steam mop, and it's machine washable, so you don't have to throw it out.
What's the material that's on the pad?
It's microfiber.
Right. Which
and
that seems to be like the big thing now, is cleaning with microfiber.
Yeah, the reason is this special kind of microfiber pad, it locks in the dirt, and it really, really lifts all the dirt off the ground. It's really amazing to see, because we're so conditioned to use chemicals, 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 it's really amazing to see just tap water just clean up the floors a whole, and it's very effective because you don't have to scrub, and you can just stick this pad on this mop, and this microfiber will just basically lift the dirt off the ground. When you think about cleaning, there are two ways to break the dirt down. You can either do it chemically, or you can do it with heat or with steam. So instead of doing it chemically, we're doing it with steam, and we're using the power of the steam and combining this with this microfiber pad, which is super absorbent, and that's why you have some great results with this product. I also want to add, what's fantastic thing about this product is the fact that it dries floors immediately. Obviously, when you mop your floors and when you put your mop in your bucket filled with dirty water,
right.
And you put it back on your floors, not only are you spreading the germs around, you're spreading the chemicals around. And then your floors stay wet for a while. And now let's talk about those mops with chemical pads that are on the market, these are these disposable pads. The problem with them is they clean the floor, but they leave this layer, this chemical wet layer. With the steam mop, there is no chemical layer, and the floor dries immediately. So it's pretty miraculous, I find. I love the product.
And I understand, like, there's an attachment that you could use for your carpet, but it doesn't clean the carpet. It refreshes the carpet. Am I correct?
Exactly. It really is refreshes the carpet. The product, the steam mop, is targeted towards cleaning hard floor surfaces. So if you have marble, hardwood floors, yes. But for the carpet, it's the attachment is used to refresh and get rid of the smell of your carpet. Especially for families with pets, it's a great solution.
Right. So that includes wood floors.
Exactly. The wood floors, my home is all wood, and I don't use anything else. Obviously, for example, marble is a great surface to clean with the steam mop. If you have a beautiful marble floor, you do not want to use abrasive chemicals. Just with the power of water and steam, you can get your floors very clean. And any kind of hard surface you can think about, steam mop will work on it.
Now, let's get to some of the other things. Everybody is into now the electric broom that came out.
Yeah, the Shark Sweeper is, I just think it's such a great product. Shark has been the leader in the sweeper category. And it's a very interesting product because it doesn't use any suction to pick up dirt. Because it doesn't use suction, it uses the power of the brush that basically with the brush roll, it's able to pick up any kind of dirt. And the way we have positioned this product is basically it picks up what vacuums can't. If you break a glass in your home, you don't want to use your vacuum to pick it up. You have to bend down and pick up the pieces and with a broom. Basically, the sweeper eliminates that issue. You can pick up broken glass. You can pick up metal. You can pick up soggy food. It just basically picks everything up.
Soggy food as well?
Yes, it does pick up soggy food. Things that you could not imagine picking up with your vacuum, the sweeper can pick up. What I really love about the sweeper is it's really very versatile, but it also is extremely light. You can literally pick it up with your finger. And it's once again, I just come back to the introduction of Shark EuroPro. It's a great solution. After my kids have dinner, I don't want to get out and haul my large vacuum cleaner or bend on my knees and pick up the food that they've left behind on the floor. I just pick up the sweeper, pick up everything on the kitchen floor. In 5 minutes, they're gone. If I want the mop, I mop it with the steam mop, and the cleaning is done. So the house is always sparkling clean.
So now, that's also, just so we, the other thing about the electric broom, aside from the fact you don't have to plug it in.
It's cordless.
It also collapses so that you can get under the furniture, right?
Yes, it does. It does. It has an extremely low profile that is able to basically get any furniture, it's a handle that we call the back saver handle that basically, bends so you don't have to bend yourself. And it just basically creates a low profile that enables you to get under furniture. Another great feature of this sweeper is the fact that it has a patented wall-hugging technology, which is a motorized side brush that grabs dirt along walls. So you can really get into spaces with this basically sweeper that you couldn't get with a normal vacuum cleaner. What's also really nice, I'll also talk about that cordless feature. You can work it up to 60 minutes without plugging it in. So you don't have to worry about the cord. It's light. It goes anywhere. And it will pick up anything on your floor. So it's really, really a very handy machine.
Okay. And one other product I wanted to talk about is the Shark Navigator.
Yes. Shark Navigator is a wonderful vacuum cleaner, which I also use daily in my home. The reason why I love the Navigator is, first of all, it's very compact. But what Shark has done is basically it has put the power of its vacuum cleaners in a more compact vacuum cleaner. And it has a very high level of agility that, doesn't sacrifice power. It weighs less than 15 pounds, but it performs like a full-scale vacuum cleaner, which I love. And it also has what we call the Infinity technology, which is the no suction loss technology. It doesn't lose any suction, and it works with cyclones. So the technology allows the vacuum cleaner to basically keep on picking up dirt without losing any suction. It has two power settings and a lifetime filter, and comes with great accessories like the pet hair power brush, crevice tool, and extra 24-inch crevice tool. It's an all-around compact vacuum cleaner that will do basically the job of a massive, massive vacuum cleaner that we're so tired of hauling around.
So it's sort of, I call it Dyson-ish.
You know, I'm biased. I love Shark EuroPro products. I'm not going to bash other brands here, but I will say that have used Dyson. It is a very, very expensive vacuum cleaner, and you sometimes wonder what you're paying for. Interesting design, you know, but I've used Shark EuroPro, and I've used the Navigator. You know, I love the performance of the Navigator and the job it does. You know, my Dyson stopped working after a few weeks. Navigator I've had for months now, and any other vacuum cleaner of Shark I've had for years, and I haven't had issues. So, but once again, I'm biased.
Well, this would be interesting. I'm going to actually do a comparison of a few different vacuums.
Sure.
To see what gets it picked up or what gets left over or, you know, things like that, just for the heck of it. I encourage you to.
And because what I've found is sometimes companies with their marketing campaigns almost make their high prices a reason to buy. People think that because they're paying $600 for a vacuum cleaner, it's supposed to be the best. Well, that's not really the case. You have to really see what the end result is. The production costs of these vacuum cleaners are not that much. But, you know, by putting very, very big margins, sometimes companies try to make a statement to the consumer. But you know, especially in today's economy, we need to be very, very value conscious and question: is this really worth this kind of money? I really find that the Shark EuroPro products are provide tremendous value, and they get the job done. And I think products like the Navigator, the Steam Mop, and the Sweeper, you can't find other products like that on the market. They basically provide the convenience to the consumer that cannot be replaced by anything else.
All right. Okay. Well, I'm going to experiment with I think I'm going to try a Hoover versus a Shark versus a Dyson and kind of just kind of see what happens. And we'll look, in terms of price and stuff like that, and what does it do, the heaviness, lightness. But I'll have fun with this. And
that sounds great. You know, we look forward to having your feedback.
Yeah, okay. And thanks for calling in, and thanks for hanging on while I had this whole thing happening to me. I mean,
it's my pleasure.
I'm so glad I got it back. Okay. All right.
Great. Have a great evening.
Yes, you too, Yuma. Bye-bye. So, yeah, do I have somebody that's calling in to talk, or who do I got here? Who's on the line?
Hey, Merle.
Who do I got?
It's Susan Lane for Women Heart.
Oh, you know, I have to tell you, I was
You know
waiting.
What, though, Lisa?
Yeah?
Yeah. Lisa can't call in, so I'm calling to tell you that she can't call in tonight, but I've been trying for about an hour to call you.
Oh, well, the thing is, because I didn't get feedback that anybody that you guys were calling in, I didn't get that you were calling in.
And I apologize. We are just, right now, everything is popping for our organization going into Heart Month, and we just, it was your call came in just a little bit in the middle of all of that. But we do want to talk, and I'm going to reschedule her.
Okay. Let me first tell everybody where the connection is. I had gone to Nutrisystem on Ice, an event which Nutrisystem was introducing their frozen foods, although none of us – it didn't look like any of us went on the ice. We were at Rockefeller Center at the time, but it seemed a little too cold and nobody ventured out there. But we did try the frozen foods. And I just had wanted to also comment. I had started the Nutrisystem. And it's what I'm doing, because New Kitchen was also at the event. So I'm looking, and when people are going – for weight loss, I guess their concern is the taste of the food as well as the amounts. And For me, it's not. It's about taste. I eat because I'm bored and stuff like that, and I eat because something tastes so delicious, you know. And I tend to eat too much. And so what I'm doing to actually vary this is that I'm using first the Nutrisystem, what I call the shelf life food, where it's prepackaged and you know what I mean, that type of food, which I just wanted to comment. Now, as someone who does food reviews, I was concerned about, is it going to taste awful and stuff like that. And just what I've gotten so far, it's not bad. I mean, it's, you know, that kind of a thing. I could deal with it. I could, you know, if I'm looking to lose weight, and yes, I could deal with it. There's nothing that I didn't find anything horrible tasting. Of course, again, it's packaged. It's not fresh, et cetera, et cetera. Then there's the frozen line of foods, which, things have to be moderated. So you're on a diet, and I'm using that to kind of vary. And the ones I've tasted at the event were fine, and I just got them today to try out as well. And New Kitchen is the one I spoke about last week. And New Kitchen is one that delivers. They'll deliver your food daily if you want, and those are the fresh foods. So you're getting all your meals as opposed to, like with the Nutrisystem, you're choosing what you want for the day, whereas New Kitchen, you're getting that day's worth of food, and that's what you're eating for that day. So where this stands with you is that you were there because, tell us what you
Well, you know what, I'll tell you something honestly. I didn't realize I was going to be calling you on the blog, but I want Lisa to talk to you about the partnership. We're just delighted to be, you know, to have this partnership with Nutrisystem, because Women Heart is all about women and heart disease,
right?
And nutrition and diet are so key in the prevention of heart disease in women. So they've reformulated their food, and they're all about good health and good nutrition, and the combination of Nutrisystem and Women Heart at this point is a win-win. So our message is to women is, you know, you can prevent, you can do a lot to reduce your risk for heart disease by what you eat, and that's one of our big messages going into Heart Month in February. But I want Lisa to come back on the show and talk to you specifically about the Nutrisystem partnership. But you know, we want to encourage all women to go on our website, womenheart.org, and join. It's free, and you can learn more about the Nutrisystem partnership and all of the wonderful promotions and programs that Women Heart has going on for Heart Month and always.
Okay. All right.
Okay, but we'll call you back. We'll call you back for sure, Merle.
Okay. You're on. Okay. Then I'll let you go. And thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks for getting to getting back to me anyway.
Yeah. Sorry about that. Thank you. Yeah. So we'll be back in touch.
Okay. Have a good evening.
Bye bye.
Bye bye. You gotta have heart. Now, all right. So now I finally get a chance. It's a little music time.
I want you so I'm ready to go.
That's an oldie, huh? Yeah. I got this, got some oldies, some rhythm and blues oldies. Well, I got to tell you something that, that occurred. A friend had called me up. I was just chatting, and I was saying, you know, what's happening? And she was telling me about that her father was brought to the hospital. And when she told me all these things that were occurring, I just, as a journalist, and I decided to call the hospital. But I'm gonna tell you these circumstances, and what's interesting is the responses from this hospital. As I said, so Friday on January 16th. Her father, he enters Vassar Hospital in Poughkeepsie, New York, and he entered there, and he was looked at in the emergency room. He's gone there times prior for other emergency situations, so it's not that he was there for the first time. He's complaining about pain in his abdomen. And it is determined that he needs an appendectomy. Dr. Delgado, his surgeon from prior physical problems, says that his appendix has to be removed, and they perform the appendectomy that evening. So things apparently went okay on Saturday and Sunday. Things seem to be all right. Now, on Monday, the patient... he's being on IV, doesn't have breakfast, and although at this point he's finally going to get his first meal, so he waits lunch, and he's complaining of stomach problems. And that evening, one of the daughters arrives to find that he has urinated in the bed and sitting in it for hours, and they try to give him broth, but he throws up. Now, this daughter speaks with a patient advocate, but as you will well see, it did not appear to make a difference. So Dr. Delgado arrives and schedules him for an X-ray and dialysis to be done the next morning at 7:30 a.m. He has been going through dialysis, and that's why they do that, and supposed to have both. Now, on Tuesday, another daughter arrives. This is the one that calls me. Arrives at about 11:30 a.m. to find that although he had been given dialysis, he has not been taking the x-rays. This daughter is questioning as to what happened with the x-rays. She also notices that there is a problem with the IV. It doesn't seem to be dripping much or of any, and there is blood all over his arm and on the bed. And in his other hand, he has a pan of vomit that looks as if it weren't cleaned up for a while. His face has vomit on it, and his gown was all twisted and soiled. So she requests to have someone deal with the IV and cleaning him up and told that they will send someone. So she requests that a nurse help to get the IV to work. So this nurse comes in. She arrives and injects fluid, but it didn't work. And now they say that a different nurse is needed to switch the IV. There was only one person per floor, and they were paging her, this nurse. In the meantime, the transportation person to the radiologist, he shows up, and the daughter says that she is first waiting for someone to take care of the IV. Now, time is passing, and asks what the problem is. She wants to know if there's only one person that takes care of IVs. And the transporter says that there is one person on each floor. Again, he says this. So it's now 12:15 p.m. Her father has got no nourishment in the system. The daughter again asks what the problem is. And the transporter has been also telling her that he has to go and can't wait for the nurse. The nurse shows up about a half hour late. Now, this is all my friend has been complaining. So it's not as if she's just saying something. She's trying to do whatever she can. Okay, so I made a phone call. I spoke to this woman, Patty Monte, who is the liaison between the patients and the physicians. And she does not want to give any information, but says this is what she says. I'm quoting, "It is the hospital's obligation to reach out to help the family and patient and provide quality care." I mean, if that's true, why is this happening, right? So she further says that she will talk with the patient. I said, well, she can't talk with the patient. The patient's in his 80s, and so far all he's heard to be yelling is, they're trying to kill me. So Dr. Delgado arrives, and he arrived, and he appeared to be talking in an angry manner to the nursing staff. Question comes up as to why the patient was taken for dialysis and not had the x-rays taken care of at the same time. And is overheard that although Dr. Delgado requests the x-rays, the comeback is that they did not write the word, since he did not write the word stat, and the staff didn't think that it had to get done immediately. Now, whether he did write it or not, I'm not sure, but that's what they're saying. So it appears that the problem with the IV might have stemmed from when he was taken either to or from dialysis and the IV came loose. The patient was also found lying on his heart monitor, which should have been safely tucked away in a pocket of this hospital gown. Now, so Patty Monty personally came down, this is what she personally came to speak with the patient and the family. So the president of the hospital, I try to call the president of the hospital, Daniel Aronson. I request to speak to him, and he was told he's in a board meeting. And they switched me to public relations person and told they're legally not allowed to comment on a patient. Okay. But she mentions, what she does is she mentions the kudos the hospital has received, and they stand behind their reputation. And I'm going, well, they stand behind their reputation. Why did this happen? So here's my question, of course. When you see an ad for a movie, do they ever quote bad critiques? So I'm bringing this up because this tends to happen in hospitals if you don't. I mean, this is now with the family being there every single day and as much as possible. What happens if the family is not there daily? You know, as to what happens in hospitals, so sometimes I guess my cat pays to go to the top, I guess. I will be writing an article about this. Okay, I'm going to take this break of something I'm not allowed to have.
What would you do to earn brownie points? How about treating someone to what may be the best brownies they've ever tasted? Fairy Tale Brownies. They may seem like one of the richest bars of fudge, with varieties that include caramel, chocolate chip, espresso nib, raspberry swirl, mint chocolate, all made with Calbo dark Belgian chocolate. But yes, they are brownies, and that's no fairy tale.
Well, I got them. Okay, what can I do? There are times there are things I can't have, and this is one of the times. So now I'm multimedia. Yes, I now have another website, merlesworlds.blogspot.com, and on that website, I'm not only blogging, I have photos, and I'm doing YouTube. Yes, if you go to, I guess, Merle's World YouTube, if you Google that, you can find some of the YouTubes that I've done. So far, I have one that I'm talking about my book, Whirl with Merle, It's a Humorous Life. And I have another one I went to. This is just before I started the Nutrisystem. One that I have, I went to this chocolate shop, Schmidt's Chocolates, and we did a whole YouTube on that, and one when I went to one of my favorite restaurants here, Mama Mina's Family Restaurant, a Filipino restaurant, and we did a whole YouTube on that. And yeah, so I won't be doing food for a while. I think maybe next week you'll be actually able to see me do scenes from The Wizard of Oz on the YouTube. My friend Steve is getting me multimedia here. And I guess it's time for me to end the show. I don't know what I'm doing next week. I think maybe I'll have, but I know I'll have Andrew Douglas on to talk about a few things. So I'm going to leave you now. Here she is. Look at this. Yeah. Time to go.
in here. Come in here. Say hello to everybody. Say goodbye.